Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for joining us again. My guest today is Kenesha Sutherland, a chef and dietetic student based out of Delaware whose goal is to teach people to nourish their bodies with respect to their cultural backgrounds. Kenesha and I dish about eating disorders in the Black community, the distrust in some healthcare professionals, and going back to school as an adult learner. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Kenesha Sutherland, to the Dish with Dina podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. No complaints. It's very dreary and rainy here in Delaware. So that's kind of putting a hamper on my energy level, but I'm embracing it and just yes. Taking lots of naps.
I too am affected by the weather, and that drains my energy level for sure. So thankfully I was able to do a lot of things indoors in the air conditioning today. So Kenesha, I always like to start these conversations with a trip down memory lane. We were just talking about, do you remember how we came to learn or know about each other? Do you remember how far back that went?
I know it was through Instagram. I'm trying to remember if it was I definitely feel like it was before 2020, before the pandemic started. And I was just getting interested in going to school to become a dietitian. So I started following a bunch of dietitians on Instagram, and you were one that popped up, and I was like, oh, okay, I like what they got going on. I'm gonna follow this person.
I appreciate that. And I said to you earlier, I was going through our DMs. I didn't see anything past, I think it was 2022, but I agree with you because I feel like we've been connected for much longer than that. And you actually even did an Instagram takeover for me not too long ago, because in the month of March every year, as people who follow me know, but also people who are in the dietetics world know, that's National Nutrition Month. So I tend to just give up my Instagram account to quite literally anybody in the nutrition field, whether they're students or other dietitians who want to take over. So can you share a little bit about that experience? How did it feel? Have you done anything like that before? And would you encourage other people to embrace opportunities like that?
I have not done an Instagram takeover before, so that was a first. Thank you. I would say it is something I would recommend for other people if you are trying to get in contact with other people that are within your field, because you have your own network and then I have my own network, but my background is more chef things. So like most of the people that I know and follow are just chefs instead of dietitians or dietetic students. My experience with it was really fun, but I was also just trying to be like more mindful of what I am posting compared to like if I was just posting on my own personal Instagram. And just trying to really give like, what is it to be a dietetic student right now? When I'm trying to remember, when was that? Was that in 2020? It might have been in 2020.
I feel it was. Yeah, that might have been in the beginning stages of when you were not really on campus, because there was a lot of transition.
Yeah, I think I was only going to campus like once a week at that time. So yeah, like what it was like for me to be a dietetic student right in the thick of the pandemic.
in the midst of it all, as you were talking, I'm thinking it's kind of like house sitting for someone, right? You're like, I know they said I can eat out of their fridge, but I'm not going to throw like a full on party.
Yeah.
So you were very respectful of my Instagram page. So Kenesha, let's go a little bit further back in time from when we did not know each other at all. Share with us your upbringing, where you grew up, what kind of family structure dynamic, and more specifically too, your first memories revolving around food.
So I have like two specific memories in my head that I can recall upon when it comes to making food. Both of my parents are from the Caribbean. My mother is Trinidadian, and I would say like I know more about Trinidadian food than I do Vincentian food. My father was from St. Vincent. I think that's just kind of how it usually goes. Whoever cooks the most, that's whose like culture you're going to embrace a little bit more. So there's something that we make in Trinidad that's called bake, which is just kind of like fried dough, but it's like bread dough. It's not sweet, it's savory. And I would always be in the kitchen, like helping my mom roll out the bake and like watching her put it in the oil and like waiting for the right moment to flip. And then when you take it out, and you put it on your paper towel type of thing. So like that's definitely a memory that's stuck in my head. And then a second memory is when I like had to cook for myself for the first time, and I made scrambled eggs. That was like the first thing that I've ever made for myself to eat.
Like you, I was in the kitchen quite often with both my mom and my grandmom. I mentioned in some previous episodes that we used to live in a two-family house, so upstairs, downstairs from each other, and cooking was a big deal. Like we, spent all day on Sundays making everything you could possibly think of. And then holidays too were really big for us as well. So when you were making the bake, was that something that was just an everyday meal, or was that
Yeah,
more of a special thing?
that's like an everyday meal kind of thing. More so, I would say like breakfast, maybe lunch. So you would just have like fried bake, and you could just put like a slice of cheese. It's usually cheddar cheese in my mom's house. So like it's like a nice slice of cheddar cheese while it's still warm. So the cheese starts to melt just a little bit. Or she might make like some salt fish. So you could just have like your salt fish and bake. There's definitely lots of different things. Like shark and bake is a thing that's really popular in Trinidad. So there's definitely different things. It's just like just a little portable hand sandwich is what you could
Yeah,
use bake
I
for.
know I think I've mentioned this before too. I taught and still kind of teach global foods, and we try to recognize that almost every culture has something that is very familiar to another culture, whether you call it whatever it is, whether it's root vegetables, the grains that we use, those portable pocket things, right? Whether it's an empanada in someone else's culture, and in your case, it's a bake, or however it might be filled with something, right? Or the design of it. So we have ravioli, which is kind of a filled thing too, or little fritters that we use as well, which are savory or sweet. So you can implement, either kinds of flavorings in those things. And so there's a lot of things I think culturally that are bringing us together than keeping us apart. Like we recognize a lot of things. But even saying that too, I think there's something to say about exploring other cultures. So where you grew up and in your family, especially when you were younger, did you venture out a lot? Because our family was, if we don't make it at home, we don't eat. And it was only on very special occasions that we would go to restaurants, because my father's like, what's the point? We could just make it here. I'm like, the point is to go outside.
Definitely a lot of home cooked meals. I would say it was probably me more so like once I got interested in culinary arts, that's when I started to like look at recipes from other cultures and try to make different things.
I had often wanted to pursue a formal culinary education, and I just never did. I took some classes here and there, knife skills and sauces and pastries and so on. But you actually had formal training in a culinary school, and you are a trained chef, like you're a formal chef. Can you walk us through some of that? Because, what we see now, what we see on television with reality shows, and also now with The Bear on Hulu, which everybody, yes, chef, everybody loves that show. Can you share with us a little bit about what your experience was, and what actually maybe you thought going in, and what the reality was? And of course, if any listeners who are interested in pursuing culinary pursuits, tell us a little bit about your experience.
I don't know why. I'm just the type of person that just kind of like does things and doesn't fully research, even with becoming a dietetic student. So I didn't know what I was getting myself into by going to culinary school. I just knew that I really liked food. So I went to a vocational school for high school, but I actually went to be an automotive technician. And it was by like junior year, I was just like, nah, this is not for me, mainly because of the teacher that I had. I didn't feel welcomed in that space in the, guys group. And I was just like, okay, the second, because you get to put like three things down when you enter into a vocational school. So like after automotive, I had culinary. So I'm just like, okay, automotive isn't working for me. So I guess I'll go to culinary school after I'm done high school. It definitely is not for the faint of heart. I think back on those days, like, how did I actually function going to classes? Because you have like regular classroom classes, then you have your kitchen classes, then the school in particular that I went to, like, everybody had to do everything. So people that was going there for restaurant management, they had to do a semester back of the house. Everybody that was doing culinary or pastry, they had to do front of the house. I also had a job in a kitchen. It was just because you also, and then you also had to have internships while you were doing this. And it was just like, how did I do this? I don't know. Like coming back to school again now, I'm just like, I'm in over my head. Who put me up to this? And I'm just like looking in the mirror. It was you.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I feel like things all come together in some way. And also, just if I can go back for a second, in culinary school, you have your own language there too. I mean, it's mostly, I would think, French based, but like the different kinds of ways, the methods that you're cooking, mise en place, stage, anything else that I can remember from when I was kind of working in that environment. So you're picking up on other languages as well, or at least a language that you're using for that. And then, like you said, in your particular case, there was a lot of cross training, it sounded like. So everybody had played a role that maybe they didn't initially set out for, which may kind of feel a little bit like when you're going through the dietetics program of going through these rotations of trying out different locations and different populations and different conditions. Is that fair to kind of maybe, kind of compare the two in that sense?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so because I definitely didn't expect to have to learn how to set a table or have to serve. I didn't know I would have to interact with people. This is why I like the back of the house. I don't have to interact with people. When you have to serve food, that's totally different. You have a different mindset if you actually wake up and like, I want to serve food today. Like, nah. I just want to cook the food, make my plate look pretty, and hands, send it.
And off it goes. So where did that come in? How was the transition into going into the dietetics program? Because for people who are listening, I know a lot of people who do listen are also students are or are within the wellness field, but there's a very specific curriculum as to from start to finish with the degree, the internship, the national exam. So share with us a little bit about how you migrated into that and what you are planning on doing as you end up with your, final pursuits there.
While in culinary school, we did take a nutrition class. I believe it was taught by a dietitian. I think she was like a super fancy dietitian, like the dietitian for the Phillies or something like that. That little like 10-week course, I was just like, oh, this is interesting. And then we also had to do a vegan course. So all of the our so we had a trimester, so it was like 10 weeks. So then I had a 10-week vegan course and oh wait, now I remember Christina Perillo, and I believe she had a show on PBS, and she's just very much a health advocate, like, oh, I reversed my cancer by switching to being a vegan and all this other stuff. But something that stood out to me with her class was saying that like chefs are kind of like the middleman when it comes to producers, farmers, and a consumer. Like, we know a little bit more than the consumer does, and we ultimately are purchasing more than the consumer does. So, if chefs are taking that initiative to demand better produce, demand better meats, and all that type of stuff from the farmers, eventually that will trickle down to the consumer. So, that was already like in my head from when I first went to culinary school. I graduated in 2013. Then I was working in restaurants. I stopped working in restaurants and was kind of doing my own little thing with catering. Then I got a job at a sorority house in Philadelphia. Wait, let me backtrack real quick. I started working at a cooperative in South Philly. And that's when I started to learn about food justice. And how to be an advocate for food justice and really learning about my own privileges surrounding food. So, in my household, there was never like a day where there wasn't food. I don't know what that is like. It may not be gourmet food, it may not be, we got a whole bunch of meat on the plate, but there was always food somehow, some way. Like, my mom makes her own bread. So, it's like we don't have to worry about not having bread, there's always flour in the house. Like, there's always rice. There's always something to make something. I just started to look at, like, what are my own food privileges when it comes to food, surrounding food, And then, as I mentioned before, I live in Delaware. I grew up in Newcastle, Delaware. And Delaware is definitely a state where you need to have a car in order to really get around. Like, mass transit is not really a thing. It exists, but it definitely isn't like SEPTA or MTA. And so I started to think about, like, oh, okay, my mother was able to go to different grocery stores. I'm able to go to different grocery stores and be able to get cheaper prices on certain things because I can look at all the prices at multiple stores. So it's just like, oh, even though, my mother was able, because I was the only, I have two older sisters, but I was the only one that actually like went to the grocery store with my mom and stuff. So I learned how to food shop very young. Like, my mother was the one that was looking at like the case price and comparing like the ounces on the sticker. And I'm just like, oh, okay, this is how we figure out how to actually get the best price for the ounces of whatever canned beans we're about to buy or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just
So
jumping in to say, right, the unit cost that you see on like those food service or ServSafe exams, that's what that's about.
yeah, I was just like, yeah, I already knew that. So once I started working with this cooperative, that's when I started to, again, like realize what are my food privileges and realize like how devastating it is that people don't have access to food, they can't afford food, and that it's all really like structural racism that kind of powers this. And it's just very mind-blowing once you start reading into things. And then I started working after the cooperative. I started working at the sorority house. And then March 2020, everybody went on spring break and never came back. So that was kind of, for me, was just like, okay, let's go to school, Kenesha. Like, that was it. I applied for Delaware State University, got accepted, and was just in it. And again, this was one of those things where I didn't truly research what I was getting myself into. So then when folks start talking about like internships and rotations, and I'm just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Chemistry, organic chemistry, what is going on here? I'm a chef. I am not a scientist. It was
That's
definitely,
exactly why I brought up the culinary discussion earlier, because you learn the language of cooking, and now you have to learn the language of science, and it's like a whole, I mean, there's science
like, I'm
in
really like,
cooking,
I have
you
to
know what I'm
tell
saying?
myself
Yeah.
sometimes, like, I'm really about to be a medical professional. Like,
Yes.
this is a whole different ball game for
And
me.
people who don't know what dietitians do often don't realize that. I'm like, I call myself a scientist all the time. I'm like, I'm practically pre-med at this point, but
Yes.
they don't realize that. They think we just kind of walk around going, is the salad good? Do you like the salad? And that's it.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
I'm just like, I'm gonna have to touch people. What is going on here? Now they're talking about we gotta learn how to take blood pressure and give what is it, vitamin C shots? And I'm just like, that sounds like a nurse. That sounds like a doctor.
You are correct. For people who are venturing into this like newly revised curriculum, there are some more medical things, more medical training things, like I think even dropping a tube feeding or
Yes.
bar, what is it, the swallows, right? The barium. Those are things that are definitely nurse specific, but for some reason they want to also maybe cross train us in doing that too. I'm happy that I didn't have to do that because I don't want to touch
They're just
anybody.
trying to get more work out of us and not pay us more. That's what's going on. I see it. I see it.
If you don't mind, I want to go back for a second because you said you finished culinary school in 2013. Like that's when you officially became a chef to venture out and to get jobs and whatever else you wanted to do in that sense. You met Christina Perillo. When was it, in between there or during that time?
She was a chef instructor at the school that I went to.
Okay. And the reason why I'm saying this or asking this is because we're now jumping ahead 10 years. How's that going with food justice these days across the country? Like, how are chefs advocating and how are farms able to apply whatever it is that we're requesting? And how is the food supply and how is access and equity? Did we solve it? Did we cure all things that in 10 years, right?
I
That's
don't.
10 years ago. And so even
Yeah.
then you're ha I mean, not that it's ever going to not be a discussion, but even then we're talking about food justice and policies. And so I keep saying this in almost every episode is that I really feel like whoever this is reaching, whatever ears that they're reaching here, that you keep in mind things like this, right? So even if you don't really know what's going on in the world and you just happily get in your car and go shopping at a supermarket and that's fine, pay attention to like who your community board members are, you know, who you're voting
Yes.
for, what their agenda is, you know, try to advocate for people who are underserved and more marginalized because you have no idea if you haven't been in it of how hard things can be. And then when we're also trying in our profession of dietetics, when we're also trying to help people manage or hopefully cure some conditions, even that is really hard because it's requiring so much of the healthcare system. Health insurance only covers certain things, certain diagnoses, and again, access to stuff, right? If you're going to see specialists twice a week, you might not have the car, the money, the babysitters you need. You can't leave your job. There's so much on so many different levels. Kanisha, I feel like this could be a whole like two-part conversation that you and I have about all this.
We're just here to keep the business moving.
The model. Well, this
But
is why I want to jump ahead now. Where do you see yourself going once all is said and done with all of the experience you have under your belt, the things that you feel like are so passionate for you? Do you see yourself kind of playing a multifaceted role with being a dietitian, but also being an advocate or maybe working on policy and programming or providing yourself with one opportunity that kind of covers all of those things. Share with us a little bit about, you know, your the future you.
the future me would love to have my dietetic practice be on a farm. Like, that would be picturesque. I don't know what is the reality of that, but you know, one day, one day. I do like the concept of community nutrition. I also want to be able to work with Black girls, Black women who suffer from eating disorders or disordered eating. That is something that is, you could basically say it is not researched. And I think that that is something that would be able to help future generations if you're able to affect somebody, affect a person that identifies as a woman, because we are naturally like teachers. We are the ones that are usually, you know, making meals and all that kind of stuff. We are the ones that other younger girls look up to. So if you're able to get to a young girl or get to their mom and able to help them, then that is just going to like keep trickling down and be able to help others. Not trying to take away from the male population. I know that there are eating disorders in that that are not researched as well, but I know I identify as a Black woman, and something that I've never had like a diagnosed eating disorder, but once you start reading things and looking into things, it's just like, oh, okay, there definitely was like disordered eating in my life. There was definitely disordered eating in the lives of people around me. And if you just don't know, you don't know. So until there's somebody that comes in and is able to start explaining things and highlighting that this is an issue that goes on. And again, it comes back to the being a food justice advocate, because sometimes disordered eating could come from, I'm not going to eat anything because I want my child to eat. And now you, as the adult, are missing the meal. Or I can't get to this grocery store or whatever store, or I don't have enough money to fund meals for the whole week. There's just so many layers to what can cause an eating disorder. So I definitely want to find something, find my little niche market that I'm able to help as many people as I can, honestly. That's kind of like what really pushed me to go back to school. It was definitely kind of like, I would say one of the most like unselfish things that I've done in my life is going back to school, because this is hard.
Oh, for sure. Well, the things that you just said, and again, with all due respect to other people in the health and wellness world, but this really speaks to a few things. Evidence-based practices, right? So the things that we know from research only cover so much. If you don't find the research in it, you're hard pressed to be able to get advocacy or be able to create a community to support people who have not been researched. So this is where I really, I'm trying to use my words wisely here, but this is where I think it's important that anyone who does feel like they're not being heard, that are reaching out to people for help, please just double check with credentials and education. This is why I'm so glad that Kanisha is going into this community, because you do have what you need under your belt versus people who might not necessarily be qualified. Like they might have anecdotal experience for their own situation that they think then will apply to everyone else, but you come with the critical mindset, the science background, the culinary background, the food justice background, that you can really put together some sort of community or program to help address all of that. Because if you don't have the evidence, you have to go with like practice-based and anecdotal-based learning or results. And that's a hard thing to sell because, in our field, we keep looking at the research. But if the research isn't there, where do you go? And so I'm just trying to tell people who might be listening who do feel underserved that you might want to just be cautious as to who you're following, whether it's on social media, on the internet, or even practitioners in your area that might not be fully qualified to be able to discuss things like medical conditions, nutrition needs, and then support you in whatever resources that you might need. I do feel like a lot of people who claim to be, wellness gurus out there in the world, do take a very elitist approach in whatever they're either trying to sell, or they have such a very unique set of guidelines that it can feel really restrictive. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kanisha, but that could also exacerbate conditions like disordered eating patterns and things like that. So I'm a huge fan of if you build it, they will come. So I really think you're putting it out there. I know from the handful of years that we've known each other, you're not a lazy person, obviously, if you're constantly you're pursuing all of these things. And so I really can visualize that for you, that you will be involved in some way of making a difference where it needs to be made. So thank you for being that person, and hold on tight because it's almost over and you're almost ready to
Right.
launch. How much longer do you have to go in the
I was
program?
about to say, I got caught up in this new shift and have to get my master's degree now. So I am in my senior year, but Dell State has just, like, during the summer gotten their master's degree program approved. So I believe, like, spring of next year is when I'll start taking master classes. And I should be done by 2025. Fingers crossed, everything goes as planned.
Fingers crossed. And I mean, it's an intensive program. It's not like you can dabble on the side with some things, but do you have something outside of school and work that you do for, just keeping your toe in the water in the sense of like your community or anything else that you might do as far as volunteering or giving back in some other way? Or is it just like, physically not feasible?
I don't get to do as much as I used to do. So now it's more so like, sharing funds to certain organizations that are ran by my friends. So I have one friend in Delaware who does free food for all. And whatever I'm able to do, she might need me to be on site that day. It could just be like chopping up vegetables or just taking pictures. I try to assist her as much as I can. And then I have friends in Philly. It's mostly West Philly that have an organization called the Bunny Hop, and they give out free produce. So I try to make sure that I donate when I can, push other people to donate towards them, and just push them on social media as much as I can. So those are the two groups of folks that I try to focus my energy on when I do have energy. To help out outside of doing school stuff. I do also, I wear so many hats, I forget sometimes. Like, I just redid my resume this past, like, last month, and like every day I just went back to it, like, oh wait, I did this too. Oh wait, I'm doing this too. A way that I am working to serve, like, my campus community is being a part of the Safe Space Coalition, which was recently started after there has been, like, a lot of reports of, like, sexual assault on campus. And they made this committee and this coalition that's made up of 9 committees, and we have a student on each committee. So I'm on 2 of those committees, And then I'm also a part of Del State's radio station. And I'm trying to use that to learn how to be better with like videography and editing and all of that. Because it's like, I got access to all y'all equipment. I'm gonna take full advantage of this. Like, y'all gonna
The
teach me how to
Kenesha
edit and
Show.
all of this? Yeah, like, so I'm trying, to figure out, navigate that, because I know, like, in the future, these are tools that I'll be able to like take with me, and like I don't have to pay for it. So I'm taking advantage of everything that the school can offer me, and just trying to like really, really help my community, different communities that I'm part of.
I think that's very important to have a well-rounded resume. I can't force students to squeeze more time out of their schedule, but I do try to encourage them to go above just the GPA, right? Your grades are only going to get you so far when you are trying to apply to things like internship programs or grad schools or jobs. They want to see a more well-rounded extracurricular leadership. Like they look for a variety of different factors and qualities. And so even if it feels like it's hard to get more time out of your already stretched out schedule, I do try to encourage people, especially if you're in that trajectory, like you're just starting out and trying to land something, or you're switching careers and you need to maybe gather more information or more experience under your belt to look for those opportunities. Even if it's a somewhat passive, being a member of some club that you show up maybe for just the events or you work the registration table, get involved in some way. Kanisha, let's talk a little bit more about that then, as I'm keeping my eye on the time here with your many hats and all the juggling and the things that you're involved in. What are some of what we call like the non-negotiables for you when it comes to your own health and wellness? What are some things that you try to maintain so that you are not getting burnt out? Or do you just fly by the seat of your pants as some students have to do and you'll kind of make up for it when everything slows down?
I'm really enjoying this nap life. Just actually, like, if you're tired, go to sleep. Like, stop trying. Like, I don't know how people pull all-nighters. My deadline is 12, 11:59:59. I'm not doing anything past that. And it depends on like what the work is. I really try to get things done during the daytime, try to treat school like it's a 9 to 5. This is the time that y'all have me for, and after that I need time to myself. I need time to cook. I would just definitely say like folks should be more aware of where they're spending their energy, and try to really come up with a schedule for yourself while you're in school. Because it's a lot easier when you have a job, like somebody makes a schedule for you. So you know, like, okay, I have to be at work from this time to this time. I have to get ready at this time. When you're in school, especially as somebody like if you're coming fresh out of high school, like going through a traditional 4-year college as a 30-year-old, I'm just like, I understand why people just leave, because this is a lot. It definitely took a while to get there. But I've learned that about myself. But take your breaks when you need to, eat when you're hungry, go to sleep when you're tired. Like, those are like, you only have one body. You gotta take care of it. And the way that academic is set up, and the way that the quote unquote rat race is set up, it is not set up for you to honor your body and to take care of your body. Like, they really want you to be in a classroom at 8 a.m. for a lecture that's like 2.5 hours.
As a teacher, I also don't want to be in that class that early when I'm, an hour away from campus.
Yeah, and then you only have like 10 minutes in between class. Like, why? When am I supposed to use the bathroom? When am I supposed to take a snack break and not be late, and then you mad that I'm late? Like, I had to eat. I'm sorry.
You're really speaking to a lot of points here, especially in the adult world. Okay, maybe you can't really finagle this relationship in elementary school or high school. But once you enter into college years, there should definitely be some flexibility. And I know as I'm an adjunct lecturer, so I'm part-time, I don't work as a full-time employee for my teaching, but we are offered a lot of opportunities to be better and more effective teachers. So our school, thank goodness, CUNY City University, Lehman College up in the Bronx, they're always trying to make sure that we have what we need and strategies and tools. And they also advocate to make sure that we are adhering to the person who might need the most help and kind of making that the standard versus the exception. So if there are people who require some accommodations, then I'm not going to make my online tests, 10 seconds each question. I'm going to just try to be a little bit more liberal with it and allow some flexibility, even if it doesn't feel like it's realistic, because otherwise I'm stressing everyone out and there's no reason for that to happen. So I want to really go through and talk to my students with, what's the end result here? I want you to come away with knowledge. I want you to feel confident in being my future colleagues. Is what we're doing in class going to do that? Or is you just sitting there trying to answer everything really fast going to do that? So while I agree, there's standardized testing. And if anybody's going for the RD exam, there are a number of questions on there and it is timed. So I want to practice doing that. But I also recognize that we have to make accommodations. And for me as a teacher too, right? I've said time and time again, I have one class that is life cycle nutrition. There's 19 chapters in that. I can't go. I mean, it's physically impossible for me to go through 80 slides in an hour and a half. Like, this is physically
Yes,
impossible. If you even just look at the
you
rules of PowerPoint, that is unrealistic. It's unrealistic. So you take what you can
have to
get.
take any questions. You
Yeah.
can't ad lib
No,
anything to make
can't.
it, personable. You just click, 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 click.
Yeah, go through this live. And so this is why, so what you were speaking of before is setting up some sort of understanding, maybe when you're walking into the classroom day one, introducing, establishing that relationship. And also, as you mentioned before, this is a theme that comes up in a lot of these episodes of setting boundaries both with yourself and with others. Because Kanisha, it's not just about going to the bathroom. Like, what if somebody physically has, a condition that they have to accommodate and their blood sugar is low? They're not going to put themselves, I hope, in harm's way to not like go and inject themselves or make sure that they're eating something or stepping out of class and then get reprimanded by a teacher. So I say, let's just level the playing field. Like, let's not make anybody feel outcasted because they have to manage a condition. Let's just say, you can come and go as you please. We're all adults here. Do what you need to do. If you're 10 minutes late, whatever. Like, you catch up, you meet with a student, record whatever you miss. Like, try to accommodate some things, be flexible, because ultimately, it's not about me sticking it to the student. It's about making sure that they've gotten a good quality experience and that they feel comfortable about going off and doing whatever their career is. So I appreciate your insight from the student's perspective and also kind of having that, like, non-negotiable, like, I'm going to set up these rules for myself, taking a nap and eating and, doing what I need to do so that you're not spreading yourself too thin. So Kanisha, as we are kind of winding down our conversation, I have a couple of questions. My first one is, what is a current week in the life of you?
Well, when I'm out of school, I really don't be doing anything. I'm very grateful that the partner that I am with, they're able to work and take care of like household bills and all of that, which is quite weird. So I call myself a stay-at-home dog mom. Make sure the household things are taken care of. I go to Costco, make my runs to Costco. That's I actually just came back from St. Vincent with my mother. We were out there for 6 weeks. So I'm trying to figure out like what do I do now that I'm back here? Like in this cold, dreary weather when I can't go to the beach every weekend. Like what do I do here? So I've just been trying to create some healthier habits for myself. As I mentioned before the pandemic, I was working in my kitchens and doing all of that, so I was more active. And there was even like a hot yoga studio around the corner from the sorority house I was working with. And then since starting school and not moving around, I've just become more of a stagnant person, and I'm starting to like realize that, and I'm just like, oh, okay, I need to move my body again. So just trying to get back into like my yoga practice and just pretty much trying to set up Right now, I'm trying to set up habits for myself that I know I can stick to once school begins again in August. So my week is pretty bland right now. So yeah, I would just say right now I'm just working on coming up with, like, I wouldn't say meal prepping, but kind of meal prepping. My meal prepping, I think, is different than other people's idea of meal prepping. I cannot eat the same thing for 3 days in a row. That's a no for me. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, okay, like, what was it? Monday, I made like a bunch of cabbage. Like way too much cabbage. But then, like, today I know I'm about to like make some noodles and meatballs, like Asian style meatballs and noodles. So I'm like, okay, I could put some cabbage and then shred some carrots. Bam, it's a whole different cabbage now. Just trying to get myself set up for success when school starts, really.
Well, I definitely see success for you based on even just the things that you shared with us today, and the fact that I think this is also going to help in the direction that you're going into as a dietitian, because you'll be able to bring that much more experience with you to help support people. And as we've said in the profession itself, meeting people where they're at, it's not a one size fits all approach. We do have guidelines and recommendations that we rely upon, but I really feel like you have a unique set of skills that you can help people with either, oh, you want to be able to cook and do all these things, or you don't feel like cooking. Here's some helpful hints of what you can do to make things as simple as possible and still meet the needs that you have to, with whether it's supporting your chronic condition or just, living a life of healthy habits and trying to be as health supportive as possible. So I really feel like you are going to have a ton of success, and I cannot wait to see you on that farm or wherever it is that you're planning on going after this. But before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, was there anything that you wanted to share that we didn't touch upon or that I didn't maybe ask?
I really think, like, talking more about food justice or talking more about like eating disorders in different communities,
Yes.
is something that needs to be highlighted. And the only way that can happen is if more people are talking about it.
So, Kanisha, this brings me to my final two questions of my episodes. And this is a food pun related question, which is what is on your plate today, both figuratively and literally. You just mentioned some of the things that you created for yourself as far as food is concerned. So, what is the next meal that you're eating, and what is the next thing that you might be doing, whether it's today or tomorrow?
So what is on my plate? Figure, I can't even say that word right now. Imaginary plate. I have to get tires put on my car because, again, I venture to Philadelphia quite often and 95 is always under construction. So nails like to be in my tire. So I have to get some tires put on. And I guess I could explain a little bit more what I plan to make for my dinner. So I get rice noodles. And I have this like chicken teriyaki meatballs, and I plan to like make a sauce with like soy sauce and peanut butter to coat the noodles and the meatballs, and then just have like some shredded carrots and some cabbage that I made in my Instapot. That is my definite tidbit for the day. Invest in the Instapot. That thing works wonders. I love it. I cook my rice in there. I can make so many things in there. Potatoes, it's just kind of like set it and forget it. I could be, people may not remember that infomercial from, the 90s. But yeah, definitely for college students, I don't know what you could get away with in your dorms, but Instapot. You could just make so many things inside of that thing. So yeah, that's what I have going on for dinner and getting my tires changed.
And getting it, that
That's what
sounds
happened.
horrible about the tires. You should, like, there should be a stipend.
I man, Philadelphia would never see their own taxes if they started to pay out for their construction and all of their potholes. They would
Damage.
Philadelphia would go bankrupt.
Unfortunate situation, but sometimes necessary, I guess, right? People are working and it helps with infrastructure, and who knows what else is on there. Tanisha, this has been such a fun conversation. I really do look forward to maybe having another future conversation with you. And I'm so glad that we've been keeping in touch with each other for quite some time, because I do feel like I've been part of your journey, or at least watching part of your journey. And I can't wait to see where the rest of this goes in the future. So thank you so much for spending time with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.